You're listening to Pros Like Us, brought to you by NFL Draft Blitz. And now, without any further ado, here's Alex and Lou.
That's right, gang. We are back and better than last week, we hope. We have reached draft week as we record here today on Tuesday afternoon. Is it quiet? Teams are, you know, kind of putting the finishing touches on whatever the hell they're doing before they go to Detroit. Zach Wilson got traded, so there's that. But still a lot of question marks here in the first round, and I'll bring in our pal Alex here. We talked a lot about, you know, perhaps some of the teams moving around for quarterbacks. That's always where the discussion is going to start. But I don't know, leading into the week, what are you looking for first round, or maybe some questions that you still think are unanswered?
I'm glad you mentioned Zach Wilson, you know, getting traded to the Denver Broncos, because it made me think, like, do the Broncos not believe that they can get a quarterback? Will they not get a J.J. McCarthy where they were at? I guess that was the question that I started to ask. Like, why would they make this trade now for Zach Wilson? It comes down to two things. Either they don't like J.J. McCarthy and they realize that there's no way they can trade up and get one of those top three quarterbacks, or they believe he's going to be gone. And therefore, they decided to do the next best thing, to get a guy with some upside possibly in, you know, Sean Payton's offense, a guy that maybe they believe they can develop. So I'm not saying Zach Wilson doesn't look like a starting quarterback right now, but Sean Payton is almost like taking on this resurrection project. And he believes maybe there's a chance. They're not giving up a lot for him, right? Maybe there's a chance that they can fix him and get
they
something.
They hardly gave up. They didn't get it. I mean, it's almost like the Jets were getting rid of him. I mean, quite frankly, I mean, they do a pick swap. So it's Wilson and a seventh to move up in the sixth. Right. And I think they're going to pay, I think, more than half of the bonus money he had coming. So yeah, absolutely. That was just like, okay, we just got to get him out of here. I mean,
it's still a bargain, but it's a bargain. Oh, I mean, the Jets wanted to get rid of him. The Broncos.
There's no risk here at all to the Broncos.
But it made me think, like, do they believe J.J. McCarthy is going to be a top 10 pick and they believe they can't get him? I don't believe so. And I said this when you and I did the show before, the previous show. I think there will be top three quarterbacks going 1, 2, 3. And then I don't see McCarthy being a top 10 pick. So I believe he's still going to be available for the Broncos or the Raiders or whoever else, maybe, who is willing to trade up. I think he's going to fall a bit. I'm not buying this agent talk that J.J. McCarthy is being considered for the number 2 overall pick. It almost feels like trying to buy him, you know, trying to, you know, get some of these wild stories going. And I think he's still going to go somewhere between 15 and 20. I don't think there's any way he's going to go in the top 10 because I just don't view him as that guy.
Yeah, I mean, all the talk of moving up and whatever, there's not a lot of teams that have a ton of ammunition or, I guess, would want to give up what it's going to take. I was just looking at when the then Redskins moved up, traded with the Rams in the RG3 trade, where it was like that year was a first, a second, and then two additional first round picks, like the next 2 years first round picks. I mean, if you know you're using history, or if that's kind of like the floor of a deal, what team is really going to want to do that? And when you mentioned Zach Wilson, especially, you know, this this class is being talked about as, oh, this is, you know, what a great quarterback class. Well, I think it was a pretty similar conversation in the 2020 class. And now you've got four of the top five guys playing on different teams and, you know, almost considered busts. I would have moved almost, I don't know about almost, I'm sure a lot of people consider them busts outside of Trevor Lawrence, and the jury's still out on him. I mean, he's been good. You think he's going to continue to get better. I get that. But all the other guys gone from their original teams, and the deals that were made to move them were minimal at best in terms of that. I think maybe the Cowboys gave up a fourth to get Trey Lance. All the other deals, you know, fifth round pick, sixth round pick, conditional, you know, late round pick. So it becomes, I think, from an ownership perspective, that maybe they're not looking at the specific player. They're just seeing over the years that these quarterbacks are kind of a roll of the dice, no matter how good you think they're going to be. And they're like, I'm going to give up, you know, three first round picks, you know, we're going to swap, you know, this year's first and then two more first and a second and something else just to, you know, in order to get this roll of the dice. That seems a little pricey, especially since, you know, now it's actually, I guess, cheaper to make that mistake. Not like in the past where those contracts were getting way out of hand. I mean, like Stafford and Matt, I think it was Matt Ryan, the last one, or there was somebody that got like Sam Bradford's initial contract was out of this world. And just anyway. So
wait, Lou, I want to stress this point. NFL teams never knew how to scout quarterbacks coming from college, but what is even more, like, you know, that drives me nuts. I mean, this just drives me crazy. They don't know how to develop these quarterbacks, okay?
Right.
It's one thing not knowing what these guys can do, right? And how they fit into their offense. That's okay. That's a discussion in its own right, right? Yeah. But there's another discussion that you have to be able to develop these guys. You have to have good quarterbacks coaches. You have to have good offensive coordinators that are on the same page that can develop these guys so they get better. But when you switch quarterback coaches like every year, when you switch offenses every year, how do you expect these quarterbacks to succeed for the most part?
Right.
You can't. It's impossible. Okay.
Right. I think the scouting part of it, I don't think is that far off, Alex. I think it's like you said, the development, everything, everybody's expecting things to be microwaved. It's like, okay, we took you in the top three, get out there and let's see what you can do. And it's like, okay. I mean, we've seen evidence of guys that have had an opportunity to kind of slow walk themselves in. They've shown the traits, if you will, of being a great quarterback, but actually learning how to be a good NFL quarterback. I think those are two wildly different things. And every so often you might get a guy that just kind of hits the ground running like a CJ Stroud, but you can't bake that in and say, well, hey, we took him in the top three. He has to be good. He has to be good right away. And these coaches are all, you know, Eberflus, hell, he's on the hot seat, right? Quinn just came in. Maybe he gets a little bit more of a runway. New England's been in the dumps for the last few years, but, you know, the Crafts expect Super Bowls because we've won them in the past. So all these teams just have these high expectations. But, you know, you've got this, whatever, 21 or 22-year-old kid, in this case, JJ McCarthy, probably one of the, I think he's one of the youngest, he and Drake May, not as many college starts, still kind of growing into their bodies, into their position, and don't have, you know, all the knowledge necessary to succeed at this level right away. It's tough, you know. I mean, again, as good as Patrick is, I don't know that if you drop him into one of these horrible situations that he becomes half this player that he's become. He had like almost an entire year. I mean, he got like a master's class sitting behind Alex Smith. You got the basically one of the better quarterback coaches ever in Andy Reid, or at least the offense is explained in such a way to the players that, you know, that it kind of makes them that type of cerebral player, or it's required that if you don't get it, you're never going to, whatever, you're not going to last. But yeah, there's just no time. Everybody wants instant results. And if we're going to invest, you know, top 10 pick in you, you're playing right away. And it's hard. And a lot of these guys that get chewed up and spit out, they probably did have some ability, but, you know, again, they just lose confidence after a bunch of losses and getting ripped mercilessly by fan bases. And they just get wrung out by the system. So, yeah, interesting to see how it all shakes out. News, well, again, I don't know if it's news, but rumors that the Giants are actively looking to move up and potentially for a Drake May. So, interesting with the Giants kind of cutting bait on Daniel Jones.
I mean, he is coming off a serious injury, and the fact is the Giants took a step backwards this year. You're not gonna, I guess, fire a head coach after he led them into the playoffs the previous year, and he decided to get rid of the defensive coordinator. You know, he didn't seem to have a good relationship with an offensive coordinator. So it seems like Brian Daboll just threw everyone under the bus. So it's not like it's not out of this world that he would try to cut bait and get a young quarterback, say like Drake May, and get Daniel Jones out of town. He's
So,
trying to save his job, Lo, just like everyone
absolutely,
else.
and that's it. That's the part of the equation that and variables that you have to figure into the whole thing, and it's, you know, it is just an unknown, especially with the coaches. I mean, they're under pressure to win right away. Do they have time to sit and develop a particular quarterback? Or am I developing them for the next guy to, you know, to kind of take advantage of all this, of all the work, the groundwork that we're laying? It's a tough deal, because what, 8, 10 coaches get fired every single year, and it's just kind of, you know, rinse and repeat, and at a certain point, you know, there's franchises that kind of get things going, if you would. And then once they do, then maybe the clock does slow down a little bit. When, you know, once you've won some games, and but even then, the expectation still is to continue to win at a high level. So yeah, I don't know that it's ever going to change, Alex. I mean, I really don't. I mean, short of, and even in college, I mean, in college, do they really do those quarterbacks get the development? I mean, I don't think they do, because why else would there be such a huge industry for these individual quarterback coaches? I mean, I mean, these kids, you know, hiring their own coaches in high school, even younger at some point, so that they can do all the necessary drills and do these things away from the teams, so that once they get to their team activities, that they're just, you know, they're not working on fundamentals as much. They're just learning the playbook, and okay, let's get the rhythm down with these receivers, and you know how this offense is going to roll. So, yeah, it's a whole philosophical thing. But in terms of this draft, a couple of the positions, you know, outside of quarterback, wide receiver. Again, the perception is that it's a very deep class, and based on what we've seen, I don't know. I don't disagree with it, but because it is deep, do you get the sense that maybe a bunch of them do get pushed down because teams feel they can get a viable player later in the draft, and maybe some of these other more scarce positions get moved up because there just isn't the quality?
No, I think that there's still gonna be three wide receivers that are gonna go in the top 10.
Right. I'm just saying, overall in the first round, do you see as many as like 6 or 7, like some are saying?
I do. I really do. Let's go through the names. So Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, definitely going top 10. And right. then I would probably say Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU. He's a first rounder. I also
then it
believe...
gets really cloudy, doesn't it, from that point?
No,
after
I think that...
After Brian Thomas?
No, I think Xavier Worthy is definitely going to be a first-round pick, especially okay. after he showed his explosiveness, his speed. I've seen this before, okay? This kid is going to be drafted somewhere in the 20s. Somebody's okay. going to value his speed and try to draft him as that number two wide receiver, a guy that can stretch it vertically. I think those are five. And then I'm going to say Mitchell. I think Mitchell sneaks in like at the end of the first round, the Texas wide receiver. So I've got six, Lo. I mean, by my counts, I mean, that's six. I've got six that I think all are right. going to be solid first round picks when it's all said and done. But when you look at the day two picks, I don't think they're any worse than some of the guys that we have listed here, you know, that are four, five, and six. Because, I mean, when you're looking at guys like, okay, I've got a list here, Troy Franklin from Oregon, Ladd McConkey from Georgia, Keon Coleman from Florida State, Roman Wilson, your guy from Michigan, Ricky Pearsall from Florida. I think, you know, there's not that much of a difference there. I always say that day two guys, like whether it's second or third round and like late first round guys, there isn't that much of a difference. And those guys usually outplay the first round counterparts. We have this discussion almost every week, right?
Yeah, they have recently. Myself. I mean, a bunch of guys, I think even, again, I mean, I guess I'm showing my Chiefs bias, but Brett Veach and his media availability, just say, I mean, they just completely whiffed on DK Metcalf. They had some concerns, but, you know, that was the Mecole Hardman. Now 31 other teams did it as well. But anyway, yeah, he actually said it out loud.
Well, I'm glad he admitted it, because most GMs don't admit that stuff, you know? Like, they get asked, like, you can't draft quarterbacks, you can't draft wide receivers. They always, like, come up with 10 reasons why they still can draft those guys, even though their history tells us that there's no way they can draft those positions. They just don't know how to do it. They don't know what they're looking for. Or maybe they're not listening to their scouts when it's all said and done. I would probably look at that factor, you know, that I think when it comes to final decisions, most GMs don't know how to make a valid, like, solid final decisions by listening to all the parties. There's usually a favorite, probably, scout that you trust more for some reason. Maybe he's your buddy and you're willing to go with him. I don't know. I mean, that just, I think that this wide receiver class is really deep, but it's not going to stop people from, it's not going to stop, you know, teams from taking wide receivers at the end of the first round, even though smart teams know that they can still get a guy that will help them as a rookie, a guy that can catch 60 passes and get like 800 or 900 yards, you know, as far as like receiving yards on day two. But again, teams, I don't know. They value like different things when it comes to wide receivers. And then different teams like have, you know, certain criteria that they look for. And you realize that when you look at their past drafts, maybe like 10 past drafts, and they've had like two different GMs or something. Just teams look at certain things. They value those things a little bit differently. And maybe that's why some teams are able to draft really good wide receivers, and some teams just whiff year after year, you know, because they're unwilling to change their criteria for what they're looking for in a wide receiver. But I still say six in the first round, and then there's probably going to be like at least like six or seven guys that go probably in round two as well.
Yeah, those are just the ones that you had mentioned. I mean, guys that have been, you know, mentioned in the top 50 or 60 players. Malachi Corley from Western Kentucky. Again, you'd have to value a, you know, a smaller, don't want to say smaller school, but it is, you know, it's not in the power five, and he's a smaller dude, and you know, maybe catches a lot of his passes nearer at the line of scrimmage. But you know, some teams value that. Xavier Leggett from South Carolina, and I'm just talking about guys that might have potential to go in that second round. Jalen Polk from Washington, Tez Walker from North Carolina, Javon Baker, UCF. Again, if you liked size, I mean, Johnny Wilson just seems like an interesting prospect, and we may have talked about him in previous episodes as perhaps almost being, you know, in certain offenses, being like a tight end because he's so big, 6'7", you know, well over 200 pounds. What are your thoughts on Brendan Rice? I mean, he's kind of a guy that, you know, is it more the bloodline? I mean, he had a great year this past year at Southern Cal, kind of came into his own, if you would. But that's one of those names that you're kind of like, well, is he getting pushed because he's Jerry's kid? Not the only reason, but maybe pushed up into the second or third round, and he might be a little bit less of a prospect.
Well, he had a great year at
Do you like him?
USC.
Yeah.
I don't. He's not one of my
Okay.
guys that I'm like targeting out there. I think he's more of a fourth round pick,
Okay.
but there are plenty of other guys that I would look at before him, like the Washington guys. I mean, we
Yeah,
know Odense.
Polk and McMillan, I think to me that, I mean, they're really, really good.
That's what I'm saying. Like those guys are really good. Like Odense, we know, right? But Polk and McMillan are really good wide receivers themselves. And like those guys I would love to have like on day two. And if we talk about my guys, I would say those are like two of my guys that I would put like in the top 10 or something. Those guys I would love to have on my team just based on what they do. And they do it well. I realize that, you know, one of them has had, you know, trouble with injuries this year, but it just, I always felt like in that offense, it was more than just Odunze. It was just those guys played their hearts out and they look like pro-ready receivers today. Guys that are able to step in and contribute from day one. I would love to have Polk and McMillan say like day two. Like Polk in the second round and then McMillan in the third round. I think those would be my guys as far as
Yeah.
if I'm looking at like day two picks. I also think that Ladd McConkey is an interesting dude. Like if he goes like somewhere in the 40s, he's gonna like outperform his draft stock. He looks like one of those guys because he can help you in the return game. He's a really good blocker. I realize that there's some concerns with his injuries as well, but I love what he does, like on the football field. I don't think he's ever going to be a number one. I don't think that, but he could be like a solid number two or really good slot receiver for somebody, and he's going to contribute. So I would say McConkey, Polk, and McMillan would be my three wide receivers that I think are kind of, I would say, are flying under the radar, in my opinion. But I think that smart teams are going to value them pretty high, especially on day two.
When I watch Ladd McConkey, I mean, now granted, I mean, you got to bring your lens back to Eastern Washington, but he looks like Cooper Kupp. Just the way he runs his routes, just the precision, the ability to just, I guess, gear down from a top speed level and then kind of make his break. And the run after the catch looks pretty good. The production numbers aren't quite there. You mentioned the injuries, and then you know, Georgia's always been more of a running team. They've always had, you know, kind of a group of wide receivers that have always been pretty good and never really featured. A.D. Mitchell, you know, George Pickens. I mean, and there have been others, of course, but it just seems like he's got a chance to be a much better pro than he was in college. And again, it's a health thing. A couple other names real quick. You'd mentioned Washington. Malik Washington transfers to Virginia and just has a crazy year. I mean, say what you will about the ACC, but I thought he was lights out and looks like he might be a player. And then a guy that maybe underachieved a little bit at Alabama, Jermaine Burton. I wanted to get your thoughts on him.
Yeah, I always like he was a big time recruit coming out, right? He played at Georgia and then he transferred to Alabama. And it just you expected a lot more. Like the expectations were very high for him as a freshman. And then all of a sudden kind of disappeared. I always have questions about guys that were like really high recruits. Like I think he was a 5-star recruit, right? And he was like a 2 major big time programs and he just never got it done. And when those guys underachieve for me, like the high 5-star recruits, I tend to stay away from them. I mean, from a physical standpoint, he's everything you probably want in a prospect. And there's a reason why he was a big time recruit coming out of high school. But those guys always worry me, Lou. Always worry me. I mean, especially guys that underachieve during their college career.
Yeah, I hear you there. And then I guess he's sort of like sentimentally my guy. I don't know why I kind of adopted him during the course of the year. But UTSA, Josh Cephas, that would be, I think, more of a day 3 pick, given some of his legal issues. But I don't know. I like him. I think he's got a chance to stick. I don't know how good or great of a pro he can become, but I think he's got the tools. He's got the size. He's got decent speed. I think he ran in the 4.5s, but catches everything. I don't know. I mean, I just think could be that day 3 steal.
I think he's going to go undrafted because of the legal issues. Yeah, I really do. I think he's going to be one of those guys that I think a few teams are going to be take a chance. But I just don't think that there's going to be anybody, especially with the deep wide receiver class. And there's a lot of guys, a lot of flavors. I don't think he's going to get drafted. If he didn't have the legal issues, I think he has the game. I think he would have been drafted somewhere from like in the 5th or the 6th round. But I think right now I'm looking at him as an undrafted free agent. And hey, he could still be your guy. Who knows? Yes. I mean, he could still outplay everyone. And maybe the Chiefs will, pick him up.
Hey, they did it now again, a completely different player and completely different caliber, I guess. But Justin Ross, hey, he's still on the practice squad, got some snaps last year. Hopefully he gets his game back. Offensive tackles looks like to be a pretty deep group as well. Bunch is probably like maybe two or three guys that have a chance to go in the top 10. And those guys, I'm assuming Joe Alt, perhaps Talis Fuanga from Oregon State. And then you've got the kid from Penn State. Again, you hear different things. I mean, I've heard him as high as top 10 and then some, dropping into the 20s, Olu Fashanu, Latham from Alabama. And then you get into maybe some more developmental guys. Just they got the size, athleticism, and Amarius Mims, Tyler Guyton, maybe Jordan Morgan, some things, swirling around, as far as in Chiefs Kingdom that they've taken a liking to the BYU kid, huge dude, Kingsley Suamataya. Just some names, offensive tackle wise. What are you thinking in terms of just talent wise and where they could be drafted or as high as they could be drafted? How many, say, in the top 15?
Well, I think it depends on the team because a couple of the guys that you mentioned, they're probably going to be better fits as guards, right, at the next level. Like especially the Oregon State guy. Like I think he's more of a guard to me. But then he would stay at tackle. And then, then we're talking about who else is there? Like Graham Barton from Duke. He's played tackle, but I think he's projected as a center. So, I mean, Morgan is also maybe a guard at the next level. than he is a tackle. So it just depends. But if we combine like the guys that you mentioned, I would say 9, Lou. And I mean, Barton is probably going to go at the end of the first round as well. And then I think the Oregon State kid is a guard. So I would say 9 go in the first round. I think the Washington.
And the other guys, like you said, Barton from Duke, Powers Johnson, you know, another inside guy from Oregon.
I think there's one guy that I think a few teams are going to be high on, and they're going to push him into the first round. I'm not certain that he deserves to be there, but I've seen plenty of offensive linemen get drafted in the past based on their athletic traits, and that's Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma. I just think he's going to be intriguing for like a lot of teams, especially at the end of the first round. And if some of those guys are gone, they're going to push him up. I think Guyton is going to go higher than we anticipate. I really do. I think a lot of people
from Georgia is just huge too. I mean, I don't know if that, you know, they always talk about the dancing bear type thing, but he just seems like that's a guy that could get pushed up as well.
I think so. He's not as good as like Broderick Jones was coming out, and he'll take some developing, but I really do believe that Mims is probably a late first round pick as well, along with Guyton. I mean, those two guys are going to get pushed up. So I would say 9, Lou. I mean, that's a number that I have right here on my piece of paper. I mean, those are guys that I believe are going to go in the first round.
Which again is, you know, if you've got 9 O-linemen, you're figuring what, like 5 or 6 wide receivers, real good chance there's at least 4 quarterbacks, potentially 6, you know, depending on, you know, how well teams like Knicks and Michael Penix, hell, somebody might really like Spencer Rattler and trade back up into the bottom.
Let's not get crazy.
We've seen it before. We've seen it before. But no. But and then you've got, let's go to one of the other prime positions in corner. And I think that most teams, or at least most of what I've seen, is you've got a couple of guys at the top, Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo, Terrion Arnold from Alabama, and then it's kind of a cluster. And you know, who do you like more? I mean, is it Kool-Aid McKinstry? Is it Nate Wiggins? Is it Cooper DeJean from Iowa? Is it Ennis Rextra from Missouri? I've seen Kamari Lassiter, maybe not in the first round, but you know, kind of pushing it. TJ Tampa from Iowa State. And then kind of a name that I keep reading and seeing is Max Melton from Rutgers. Again, maybe not a first rounder, but certainly I could see him like in the top half of the second round. Brother played, I think last year, plays for the Packers. He's played for a couple different teams, wide receiver, and Max also went to Rutgers, and here we are. So how do you see Mitchell and Arnold as top, I don't know, maybe top 15 guys?
I really love Mitchell from Toledo, and I think he has answered like every question that he had to during the postseason. He did it at the Senior Bowl when it seemed like he was one of the better prospects there. He also continued, you know, his hot streak at the scouting combine. So he didn't play in the Power of 5 conferences. His sample size was really good the last couple of years. He dominated. But now he was able to raise his game up and show that he can compete against, you know, the best of the best. So Mitchell, to me, is clearly the number one cornerback in this draft, and I can't see him getting out of the top 15. I think he's going to get drafted somewhere from like 12 to 15. He deserves it. I just can't imagine him dropping out and being drafted later than that. And then Arnold, I think he's going to get drafted somewhere in the 20s because he didn't have the best, you know, combine. You know, he had a good year at Alabama, but he's not like the most polished cornerback in this class. But, you know, he's got some traits that you like. And those are only the two corners that I have a first round grade on. There's probably going to be another guy that gets in there. Maybe it's the other Alabama corner, but I'm not high on him. I have like a second round grade. So I'm going to say Mitchell and Arnold. Those are my two corners. And frankly, this is a really weak class when it comes to cornerbacks. I feel like, Arnold, if you don't get him, then I think there's a huge drop off. Mitchell is like one of my guys. I mean, that's a guy that I would, bang the table for. And especially teams are always desperate for cornerbacks in the draft. And I just feel like if you can get the clear-cut number one corner, and he's going to be a staple for you, for years to come, for the next like 8 to 10 years, you do it. So that would be one of the guys that I would that's also one of my guys. So Mitchell from Toledo. I just feel like I like his game. I love his game. And I feel like he has answered all the questions out there.
All right, before we move on to another position, and just I guess wanted to get your thoughts on Cooper DeJean because, or DeJean, I'm not sure how he pronounces it, but just very, very varying opinions on this guy, whether he can play corner, was he a product of the Iowa system on defense? He's a super athlete from what I can see. He's great on special teams as far as returning, is being a gunner, so he can add that to the piece too. You don't take a guy in the first round because of that, but again, the more you can do. Do you think he would have the ability? Again, does he have to be in a particular system to be an effective corner in the NFL?
Most likely, yeah. We would probably have to be in a zone scheme, but his footwork, Lou, his ball skills, and he's got great athleticism. If you combine like those three traits, that's an outside corner to you. I don't know. I mean, people are talking about safety, nickel corner, but I mean, he looks like an outside corner, and he should be given like every chance to compete there. Because to me, he's got the traits to do it. I just think, yeah, it has to be in a zone scheme, in my opinion, just based on where he played and, you watch that defense and where you feel like he could succeed. I think he's a day two pick, but he's a great athlete. I agree with you. So if you're a great athlete as a corner, sure, you've got a chance. I mean, because you've got some of those things that teams look for. I mean, every team looks for a guy that is athletic, has great speed. I mean, that's what pushes cornerbacks up in most drafts, right? It does. And yeah, I think he's got every right and shot to play outside corner at the next level. I mean, I just don't understand this talk about him playing safety or being a nickel corner. Put him at outside corner, try him there, see if he sticks. I think in a certain system, I think he could be a very effective player.
See, and I guess since teams are mostly in their sub packages most of the time anyway, the defensive back position I think is really ever evolving. It's like you almost have to be able to play inside, outside, whatever, zone, man, press, I mean, everything. And again, in certain schemes, and especially where you've got these chess piece type players, you can put them almost anywhere. I mean, I'm not saying he's the same guy, but I almost look at like L'Jarius Sneed's like varied skills. They could put him anywhere in the defensive backfield. He comes off the edge on blitzes and whatever. I think that's, I guess, the type of guy that just about everybody's looking for. I don't know if Cooper's that dude, but I think he has the potential of being that. And maybe just because of that, and because it is such a premium position, that there is a chance. I hear what you're saying, second or third round pick, but again, you may have like one of these teams. Baltimore may vary his skill set more than somebody else. Hell, Spags, he would certainly value those types of skills. I don't know that they go corner right away, but that's, I think, kind of the thing you're looking at there. I mean, if Martindale was still in the league, I mean, he would certainly value that skill set. All right. Edge rusher. I mean, just again, looking at the premium positions just on NFL teams, of course, that's always a premium. Talk is coming in. There really isn't a bunch of guys here. I don't know. I would imagine on some teams' boards, none of these guys is good enough to be picked in the top 10 in terms of edge rush. But you keep seeing the name Dallas Turner associated with Atlanta at 8. Jared Verse potentially, you know, in the top 15. Latu, who everybody seems to think has the most skills, but you know, you still have the neck issues that, again, he's been cleared and he played, you know, as much as anyone else played this year at UCLA, and those issues are behind, but they're still there. So some teams might be scared off by that. And then you've got a guy like Chop Robinson that has all the physical abilities, and another one of these Penn State guys that for some reason doesn't put up any numbers in state college, and then comes the NFL and you see them kind of blossom a little bit. So those are kind of the guys that are being talked about. I mean, do you see any of these guys going in the top, say, top half of the first round?
I don't. Like, I got to be honest. Like, I would say Atlanta would be much better served by getting Mitchell from Toledo at number 8. I just think, you know, you can't go wrong there. You know, lock them up, get two corners, and, you know, you'll be able to shut everyone down in the NFC South. I don't know. I mean, Dallas Turner is a favorite of mine, and I understand that people are high on Latu. I mean, with his hand usage, his pass rush moves, but is he a great athlete? He's not. And the fact that he's got like a huge injury history, I don't know, Lou. I mean, and Turner, I mean, he's got to improve as a run defender as well. I mean, he's got some high ceiling traits, but I'm not sure I would spend a top 15 pick on him. I would feel much better if these guys were available in the 20s somewhere. And then right. I can get, you know, one of those edge rushers. But I know that teams are going to push him up. They will.
Right.
Because they always do. They always do. I mean, guys that can.
Classic, you know, because this is sometimes where the classic need over best player available. And I think you described it very, very eloquently with taking Mitchell over the edge rusher. Even though you need an edge rusher, Mitchell is certainly the better prospect. And I don't care how many corners you have, you need more. And that would be perfect.
I just think edge rushers always get pushed up, and these two guys are going to get pushed up, and I'm sure there's going to be a third one that gets drafted somewhere at the end of the first round that doesn't deserve it. It should be more like a top 50 pick, but we see it every year.
That might be Chop Robinson, right? Because just that first step.
Jared Verse yep. from Florida yep. State. I mean, that's another one that I think.
Well, Verse at least had a lot of production since he transferred to Florida State.
And he's probably going to go. And he's probably going to go.
Robinson,
But
is
I
this
mean,
like an Odafe Owe? I mean, he was another one. He really, I don't know, would he had like a handful of sacks, if that, at Penn State. And, you know, they look at him and they say, this is a Raven, right? I mean, you talked earlier about teams that kind of have the things that they look for, and I've said this 100 times, but you know, you look at guys and this is a Raven, this is a Steeler, and there's certain teams that you can kind of see this is what they look for, and a lot of times they leave those particular teams and then all of a sudden they're not as good, and you're thinking, well, like, what the hell happened? Well, I'm not saying that it's just scheme, but they certainly put them in very advantageous situations to play to their strengths, which every coach should do, but not every scheme you're going to be able to do that with all 11 guys. So, yeah, I hear you.
So, I mean, but we've talked about like a handful of positions, right? We've talked about offensive yep. linemen, wide receivers, and quarterbacks. So if we talk about like four quarterbacks, like say nine offensive linemen and six wide receivers, that's like 18 players right there, yeah. Or 19, right, that go in the first round. And so three positions are going to dominate, Lou. It looks
like. Offense. You might not see you again. I guess Dallas Turner is kind of the one, or perhaps a Quinyon Mitchell sneaks in there, but there's a very good chance you don't see a defensive player in the top 10. I don't know that that's ever happened. If it has, it may be once, at least in the modern draft, you know, post-merger, whatever you want to call it. But it just, it's a very offense-heavy draft for sure, especially in the first round, right?
Especially in the first round, yeah, because I mean, you've got offensive linemen, you got wide receivers. I mean, the only case that you can make is that we won't see too many running backs go early. We're not even talking about the first round. We're talking about even day two.
I think these guys get pushed down. Third round might be like somewhere. It's like nobody wants to be the first one, but then once it happens, then you'll see like four or five of them go like in that, you know, in a row, not maybe not in a row, but, you know, very soon thereafter.
But yeah,
the run will start.
Not a very good draft for edge rushers, not a very good draft for edge rushers or even corners. I mean, corners also.
Yeah, we only mentioned a handful that have a chance in the first round. I mean, Nate Wiggins' name has come up. He just seems small to me. You know, you had that. Who was the kid from Mississippi State that got drafted in the first round last year? To Washington. The DB.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's Forbes.
I can't think of his name, but he was a small dude, like 170 pounds or something.
Forbes.
You know, and he gets swallowed. Yeah, he gets swallowed up. So it's, and I'm not saying Wiggins is that size, but he's smallish compared to some of these others that you might want, you know, a little bit more girth out there, somebody that can actually make some tackles. You know, I don't think you're able to just, you know, throw a Dion out there and just, you know, hey, just blanket that side. We don't care if you ever tackle a running back in your life. Just make sure that wide, you know, their wide receiver one doesn't become a factor in the game. Defensive tackle also very, very short list in terms of guys that are being talked about. Byron Murphy, I guess the second from Texas. I like John Newton from Illinois a lot. I just think that if he played at a different school, we'd be talking about him much higher in this draft. I don't know. Maybe I'm overrating him, but he just seems like that's a guy that can really disrupt a game. And especially the way defensive tackles have really, I mean, it seems like the market has really grown in terms of what they're getting paid. And every team is looking for that inside pass rush. Not that he's an expert, but I think he has the ability that if he gets with a good defensive line coach, this guy can be a problem.
I think he can be. I mean, you could say that for a lot of guys out there. Like,
Yeah,
I guess you could do that. Everybody has got a ceiling and stuff like that. But I agree with you.
Yeah.
I think if he went to like a top school, if he went to, you know, Ohio State or something like that, or, you know,
if he played for Michigan this year, we'd be talking about him in like in the top 10.
I believe so. 15. I actually agree with you there, Lou. I actually agree with you. The only thing is, he's not the biggest dude.
He's not a perfect prospect. No, not even close.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I wish he was like closer to like 6'4", 6'3" and a half. And then we would
He's no Chris Jones, Alex. Come on.
Yeah, but even Chris Jones was drafted in the beginning of the second round.
Oh, he was top of the second round. That was one of the best. Just a draft story. Best trade never made. The Chiefs were trying very, very diligently to trade up with, I don't know if it was the Broncos or the Broncos made the trade for Paxton Lynch, right? And they couldn't get it done. So they moved back and they took Chris Jones. So,
well, hey, it didn't work out too bad.
It kind of worked out a little bit.
If we're talking about Newton, Lou, I just think I wish he would have. He was a better run defender, just in general. And also at the combine, I think he wasn't able to work out. You know, I think he had a foot injury, and I think the fact that he wasn't able to work out at the combine and like the biggest stage, that probably
out of mind.
You know,
yes. Yeah.
his surge, you know.
Whereas another guy, now again, he might be limited athletically, but it just seemed like he's another guy that just crushed the postseason process is Braden Fisk from Florida State. It seems like if you're talking about these guys, and I don't know, I've paid a lot of attention this year for some reason. We just happen to watch a lot of the coverage of the Senior Bowl, is that a bunch of these guys really stepped up. And as much as Quinyon Mitchell stepped up at the corner position, I thought Braden Fisk, just from a different level, he didn't start out as high as maybe Mitchell did, but he certainly moved himself up maybe even a greater amount because he had a farther way to go. But he just knocked it out of the park. And then when you hear the guys, like Jim Nagy that runs the thing, and just some of the other coaches that had the opportunity to work with them, the coaches that were there on the field, everybody raved about this kid and just the leadership. And then I think it was on game day, whatever team he was on, the other team had some people opt out, and he basically was traded the day of the game and played on the other team because they were down defensive linemen. But the story grew, and all of a sudden you're seeing him, maybe top of the second, maybe sneaks into the bottom of the first.
I also think Chris Jenkins from Michigan is going to be a hot name. I really do. The son,
Another bloodline guy.
the bloodline guy. I realize that he didn't have the numbers. I realize that he spent a couple of seasons as a backup, and he doesn't have like the big rushing numbers out there, but he can create pressure. And I think he's a tough dude. He's strong. I think he's a guy that's out there that I think has a chance to maybe sneak into like the late first round because people are going to look at him and he's a pretty athletic dude. So in the bloodlines, who knows? I think Jenkins might be one of those guys that surprises people.
All right. Okay. All right. So going into it, anything else that kind of stands out for you, Alex? What you're looking forward to? What maybe we should be looking for?
Don't you get the
Day
feeling
one,
that,
let's say.
yeah, so I think there's going to be a lot of trades, actually, Lou.
You do?
Yeah,
Okay.
I do. Maybe they're not going to be a lot of trades in the top 10, maybe one,
Okay.
but then I see a lot of trades developing like later in the back half of the first round. And the reason why I say that is because when I put my list together of like true first round picks, I don't know. I only have like 15 guys, Lou. And I think a lot of teams do. Like locks for the first round. And then I see a lot of guys from like 16 to like 60 that I believe are like second
Not a lot
round
of
guys.
separation.
Yeah, there's not
Not
a
a
lot
lot
of
of
separation.
separation.
And that's why I think that there'll be teams jumping up to the late first round to try to get
To
those
get their
guys
guy.
that they like. And that's the reason why I think we're going to see a lot of trades in the back half of the first round. That's just my opinion. I think you get you know what's going to happen like in the top 10 pretty much, but I think there'll be a lot of teams trading up for their guy that they see as a first round, a guy that they have a first round grade on. In my opinion, there's probably about 15 guys that have a true first round grade for me. And then the rest of the guys just trail off. And I feel like I can get that guy in the second round, in the third round. There's no reason why I should draft him at the end of the first round.
One of the other things that Veach had mentioned is his availability, was he was seeing it. He's a lot more forthcoming on these things than any GM I've ever heard of. And it doesn't, not like he's given away his draft board, but he like answers questions without just like a lot of GM speak. He feels that once you get past like even like the third round, because of whether COVID, NIL, guys sticking around longer, the age of the players at the bottom, there's like a fall off because, I mean, maybe some of the younger guys are staying longer, or there just aren't as many this year. And he just feels like from like the maybe like the fourth round on, again, there's not a lot of separation there, again, because of age, COVID, NIL, and all these different things. So that was interesting, just the way he put that, and the fact that they had 221 names on their board, which he feels is way more than they need. But he's feeling, again, and I'm sure this isn't news to you, Alex, but just, you know, people listening don't get into the minutia, that every team has a different draft board. So, you know, when you look at some of these guys, oh, I can't believe he went here, or, oh my God, my GM sleeping on this guy. I mean, they don't all value these guys the same way. And then the other piece is that most of those 221, or maybe like 80 of them, are going to be just guys that you want to get ready to make those phone calls once the draft ends, because they didn't get drafted. And you know, make sure that they have the right phone numbers, the right agents numbers, all that good stuff. So got a little bit of a behind the scenes from Brett, who just, by the way, got another 6-year deal. God bless them, him and Coach Reed. So anyway, one more guy I wanted to mention, and this is just kind of a shot in the dark. I'm looking at, you know, maybe like 5th, 6th round running back from Purdue, Tyrone Tracy, that I guess he had transferred from Iowa. I think he was a wide receiver at Iowa, but he just looks like, now I'm not going to call him Jahmyr Gibbs, but he's got that kind of versatility. And I think in the right offense, you know, third down back, slot receiver, whatever, he can be one of those, again, quote unquote, offensive weapons that, depending on the team that takes him, how they deploy him, he can be a problem for sure.
Is that like a Chiefs pick? I mean, are you looking for him?
The Chiefs? Alex, pretty much everything I say anymore is from that perspective. Yeah, I mean, Jerick McKinnon, I mean, God bless him. I think he's like 33 now. He's out there. He's a free agent again. Same thing happened last year. I think they signed him last year after the draft. They got to get some youth in there. They brought back Clyde, but he's not that type of player. So, yeah, they could certainly use him. I like him a lot. So, anyway.
Could be. I think you're still pushing the guys. He's probably going to be an undrafted free agent just because.
Could be.
And but I think he's a good fit for the zone blocking scheme. I think he's got that playmaking ability. And, you know, he tends to, like, bounce runs. I mean.
He can,
I don't know,
catch,
I mean,
the ball. That's the,
I always
thing,
like,
he,
guys that can catch the ball, just like you.
Yes,
I value
gotta
those
have
guys.
Them.
You gotta have.
Gotta be the whole package: pass protection, receiver, run it when you need to, just so it's not like, oh, you know, you want to throw the defense a curveball every now and again. You don't just throw them in there because, oh, well, they're gonna pass. They brought this dude in, so yeah. Any, you had mentioned a few that were your guys. Any you didn't get to?
I mentioned the Washington wide receivers, Polk, yep, and McMillan. I love Adunze. You know, Marvin Harrison Jr. is my top prospect in this draft. God, the quarterbacks scare me in this draft. They really do. But I do hope that a couple of these dudes work out. And it's not going to be like the repeat story of a few years back when, like you mentioned, you know, only Trevor Lawrence is a bona fide starter, and he's not even a star. And then you've got, you know, four guys that have already, like, changed teams. So I hope this quarterback class will work out for the teams that are drafting them high. So I would say, yeah, I'm a big fan of those wide receivers. And Mitchell, the Toledo corner, is also my guy. I'm trying to stay away from the edge rushers. You know, Joe Alt is my guy as well. He just looks like Joe Thomas to me, really does, like, in a lot of ways. I think a guy that they could have a very long career. So I would, if he's available at number 5, I don't think Harbaugh is going to pass on him. I think that's a lock, Lou. Actually,
yeah,
I just want to make this a lock.
Either, yeah, I think that's, if they don't get a good, like a really good trade down deal, yeah, I think that's all for sure. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. So one last one for me. Another one that kind of came up during the ramp up process here, draft season, if you would. But an offensive lineman from Wisconsin, Tanner Bordellini. Ran the third fastest three cone of any of offensive linemen ever. Okay. Second fastest 40 and 10 split of this offensive line class. Plays all up and down the line. The only position he hasn't played is left tackle. Started 28 games at Wisconsin. Again, you typically can't go wrong with Wisconsin offensive linemen. And he gave up one sack and two quarterback hits this past year. Now, Wisconsin's not a huge throwing team. I get it, but pretty good. Very athletic. Probably needs to bulk up a little bit, but he can move. So you got to like that. If you need like a swing lineman or somebody that, you know, is that sixth or seventh lineman on your team on game day that can come in and play anywhere if somebody gets hurt, let's go with Tanner Bordellini. Probably, probably day three, maybe even day two. We'll see.
You're always pushing these guys up. I mean, why not a first rounder? Let's try to get them into the first round.
Let's see, my favorite first round. Yeah, I mean the receivers, of course, but yeah, I always look for the underdog guys, not so ones that aren't mentioned as much. So, all right, Alex, that's going to do it for us. Can't wait for Thursday night, and Friday and Saturday. If you guys get bored and want to hear this voice a little bit more, you can catch me at Chief Blitz on YouTube. Should be on tomorrow at noon Central, 1 o'clock Eastern, as well as Thursday and Friday and probably during the draft and Saturday and pretty much every day of the week. But for sure tomorrow, check us out on YouTube at Chief Blitz. So for my pal Alex, I'm Lou. Till next time.